It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
And good morning, everyone. Good morning. This is Bill Carnes, your host right here on 2A Radio. Well, I want to read to you a thing called What is a Gun Extremist? I came across this on keepandbeararms.com. It says, first, is the letter to the editor at the Detroit Free Press. And here's what it says. Rochelle Riley, in her column last Sunday, entitled Royal Oak's Choice, Guns or Families, is right to criticize gun activists who are imposing their will on the city of Royal Oak. You get this? People who are exercising a God-given right recognized in the Second Amendment to the Constitution are somehow imposing their will. Would that be the same if everybody in Royal Oak was Jewish and the Christians came in to impose their will? Or if they are Christians and the Islamists came in, the Muslims came in to impose it, would it be a religious question? Right now it's a gun question. The sense of entitlement and privilege motivating such zealots should not be confused with patriots defending the Constitution. Okay, entitlement and privilege. No, it's a right. This is intimidation and bully tactics, plain and simple. Tactics effectively used by Tea Party and militia types to push those who step out of line. Hence what the Second Amendment is all about. Such zealots, a minority among gun owners, are themselves politicians with a lockstep agenda focused on guns. Any city or individual who doesn't share their obsession is being targeted for legal and economic punishment. Never mind that Royal Oak's leaders, duly elected to represent the city, at first wisely decided to make a family-oriented event for tens of thousands of people a no-gun zone. That's unacceptable to vigilantes touting guns 24/7. That's by a guy named Barry Knister, K-N-I-S-T-E-R, of Pleasant Ridge. Now, I have to say that you don't know what the hell you're talking about, because if you have tens of thousands of people and they're unarmed, guess what? There are tens of thousands of victims. Tens of thousands of victims out there. Here's the response. There are plenty of reasons why Kistner, an ex-Peace Corps worker who came of age in the 60s, would look askance at anyone seeking to exercise their Second Amendment rights and carry a loaded weapon in a public place. We don't tarry with the actual politics of open carry. The more interesting meme emerging from this example of gun control advocacy is to divide and conquer. In the same way that there are good Muslims and there are extremists, the left now wishes to establish the fact that there are good gun owners and gun extremists. So right there, above the letter in bold, courtesy of the letters to the editor, gun extremists. This, despite the fact that Mr. Kistner doesn't use the phrase once in his mini problematic related diatribe. The humanities prof and the novelist call the open carry corps activists, zealots, and vigilantes, all of which are less insidious, effective than extremists. Stay tuned, guys. There's more of this when we return. This is Bill Carnes right here on 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
right, guys, welcome back. We're reading from an article called About Gun Extremists. Now, it says, right there, we're talking about how a person who is really slamming people who want to carry openly as extremists and trying to establish that there are good gunners and gun extremists, trying to really have a dividing line there. So right there, above the letter, in bold, courtesy to the letters of the editor, gun extremists exist. But what exactly is a gun extremist? The simple answer, any gun owner who doesn't support gun control, according to the people who would use the term gun extremist. The Supreme Court's recent Heller and McDonald decisions, striking down handgun bans and incorporating the Second Amendment, making it Trump local and state law, opened the door to Orwellian interpretation. There's a part of Justice Alito's majority opinion in the McDonald case that opened Pandora's proverbial box, as if to say, it is important to keep in mind that Heller, while striking down a law that prohibited the possession of handguns in the home, recognized that the right to keep and bear arms is not, quote, a right to keep and carry any weapon whatsoever in any manner whatsoever and for whatever purpose, end quote. We made it clear in Heller that our holding did not cast doubt on such long-standing regulatory measures as prohibitions on the possessions of firearms by felons and the mentally ill, laws forbidding the carrying of firearms in sensitive places such as schools and government buildings, or laws imposing conditions and qualifications on the commercial sale of arms. We repeat those assurances here. Despite municipal respondents, Doomsday Proclamation's incorporation does not imperil every law regulating firearms. Now, that's what these anti-gunners are sticking to. It's important to keep in mind that Heller, while striking down a law that prohibited the possession of handguns in the home, recognized that the right to keep and bear arms is not, quote, a right to keep and carry any weapon whatsoever. Okay? Now, those who would have guns, who would ban guns, have regrouped as predicted behind the reasonableness loophole in the Supreme Court ruling. They deem concealed carry bans, magazine capacity limits, waiting periods for firearms ownership, limits on the number of operable guns in a single household, expensive qualification requirements, gun registries, and other hurdles as reasonable. Anyone who disagrees is, by their definition, a gun extremist. Well, I guess yours truly would definitely be considered a gun extremist then. Magazine capacity limits? You know, Dave Champion, host of the Dave Champion Show, guy that got me into radio, he and I did a YouTube video. You can search on there, Carnes Champion on YouTube, and you can see that we did a video dealing with magazine capacity limits and really what the net effect is if somebody's actually involved in a shooting. Go on there and check it out when you get an opportunity. Certainly not during my show. I'd appreciate that. Waiting periods for firearms ownership. We have the Brady background check. It is instant. It used to be a 3-day wait until everything got computerized, and it took them, 3, 4, 5 years to get that all put on the computer? Now it's an instant check. So, is there a waiting period to exercise your First Amendment right? Must you wait before you're allowed to speak your mind? Do you have a word or time limit in speaking your mind to the government? If so, then your First Amendment rights are being violated. Hence, your Second Amendment rights would be violated with things like magazine capacity limits and waiting periods. What about the limit on number of operable guns in a single household? Well, that's interesting. Is there a limit on the number of crucifixes that you can own and display in your home if you are a Christian? If the answer to that is no, then limits on the number of operable guns in a single household would therefore be, unconstitutional. How about expensive qualification requirements? Would it be expensive? Would they charge you to go through some qualification to tell us that you are of sound mind enough to actually practice a religion or intelligent enough to actually speak your mind to the government and cost you time and money to do so? If the answer to that is no, then expensive qualification requirements would be unconstitutional. What about gun registries? Keeping your guns registered. Do you have to register as a Catholic, as a Muslim, as a Jew, as a Buddhist? How about if you're a Protestant or you're a member of the Lutheran Church or a Mormon? Must you register? If the answer to that is no, and keep re-registering periodically, if the answer is no, then registering your gun would also be unconstitutional. Now, continuing with this story. On the other side, gun rights groups are filing lawsuits against what are otherwise considered unreasonable firearms restrictions on the local and state level. Generally speaking, they define any law that goes beyond banning criminals and the mentally ill from firearms ownerships as unconstitutional. Specifically, the Second Amendment Foundation targeted Maryland's regulations requiring a concealed carry applicant show, quote, apprehended danger to carry concealed. Now, even though the McDonald case represents a sea change in public opinion regarding firearms ownerships, it's going to be a long and slow battle. Meanwhile, open carry advocates, gun owners who believe they have a constitutional right to keep and bear arms, as in openly carry arms, are on the conflict's cutting edge, at least in the media, who are attracted to openly displayed weapons like low-rent lawyers to a car crash. Are open carry advocates gun extremists? Of course they are, according to these anti-gun zealots. But then again, of course they aren't. No matter where you come down on this debate, the media has an obligation to avoid intentionally inflammatory language unless it's a direct quote from a gun control advocate or an anti-gunner, which in this case, it was not. So shame on the Detroit Free Press. Of course, Detroit, which is really, it is the socialist model of America. Detroit became America's first socialist metropolis back in the 1950s, really took hold in the 60s, and all throughout the 70s just became entrenched. And you can see the condition of Detroit right now. The least expensive homes in America are in Detroit. You can literally go online and buy a home for under $5,000 cash. Or you could take it on a 30-year note for about $14 a month. All throughout Detroit, they have a socialist system. The government reigns. Everybody pays way too much in taxes. And the social programs there are and have been completely out of line for decades. It is now third and fourth generations throughout Michigan, in and around the Detroit and Dearborn areas, are on some sort of social welfare program where you literally have nobody in the last two, three, four generations who's ever actually worked a day in their life, never had a job. However, they can get free assistance. Now, where does that assistance money come from? It doesn't come out of thin air. They have to take from the people who are actually working. Anybody out there familiar with Ayn Rand's book called, what is it? I just read it. I can't believe I forgot the name of the book. My God, I feel like a heel. Anyhow. Atlas Shrugged. Pardon me. Atlas Shrugged. Considered to be the second most influential book in the last 50 years, next to only the Bible here in America. The most influential book in American history, second only to the Bible in the last 50 years. If you have not read Atlas Shrugged or gone through the audiobook, keep in mind, this is a huge book. The audiobook itself is 50-plus hours, 52, 56 hours, something like that, which is actually how I got through the book. You have just unbelievable social programs that go on, total wealth redistribution, and where everything is supposed to be for the greater good. Individual accomplishments through business or through personal aspect are absolutely torn apart, so everybody can be on even ground. Those who don't work or don't put forth the effort are rewarded. Those who do are punished. That is exactly the sort of social aspect and social group that's been put together in Michigan, throughout Detroit, and we're now experiencing at the federal level. We've got plenty more ideas, thoughts, and stories coming for you in the next segment, so stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're listening right here on 2A Radio.
If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
And welcome back. Now, Action Target is a company out of Provo, Utah, that makes all sorts of target systems. They actually put together a range out there near Eagle Mountain, Utah, in a spot called The Farm. And The Farm is entirely set up with Action Target systems. You could certainly go to their warehouse and see a lot of things, their manufacturing facility. But not far from Provo, outside of Eagle Mountain, is actually where they have The Farm. And you can go there and do shooting and different events they have. I've shot out there a few times. Now, this same company recently, they put out a newsletter, and they recently put together an indoor firearms range on the very top floor of the Federal Reserve Bank in downtown Chicago. Now, I don't know what a private banking institution needs to have a full upper floor shooting range for, but they do. Anyhow, Action Target is now joining in against the shooting range ban in Chicago. Let me read this to you. A Utah company that manufactures products for gun ranges has joined the fight against Chicago's latest handgun restrictions. Chicago passed a new ordinance which requires gun owners to be licensed but bans firearms ranges within the city limits to anyone other than police or law enforcement in the wake of the Supreme Court decision this last June, McDonald versus Chicago, that left little doubt that the city's 30-year handgun ban would fall. Provo-based Action Target Incorporated filed a friend of the court brief in the case last week, joining the Second Amendment Foundation and the Illinois State Rifle Association in challenging Chicago's restrictions. According to Randy Graham, Action Target's vice president, "We believe that citizens have a constitutional right to use and train with firearms in a safe and controlled environment." Now, according to the brief filed in the U.S. District Court in Chicago, Action Target has recently built a number of ranges in the city and was bidding to retrofit gun ranges operated by the Customs and Border Protection Service and federal air marshals. Quote, it's quite obviously better for potential gun owners and, in the interest of public safety, that prospective gun buyers experience a variety of guns or at least those guns they are considering before actually making their purchase. Now, Action Target's attorneys wrote this in a court document. They also said, "And many people are introduced to shooting and gun ownership by visiting a range prior to deciding to purchase a gun.
This last June, the Supreme Court ruled that the Second Amendment prevents governments from significantly limiting the right to keep and bear arms, and that the Second Amendment, quote, applies equally to the federal government and to the states. The ruling was similar to 2008 ruling that struck down a Washington, D.C. handgun ban, that being Heller versus D.C., or D.C. versus Heller, rather, pardon me. The court's ruling allowed room for government to place some restrictions on firearms, and last month, Chicago Mayor Richard M. Daley, scumbag, said the city expected the court ruling and had worked to craft, quote, reasonable and responsible substitutes. Either we enact new and reasonable handgun laws in Chicago to protect our residents, or we do nothing and risk greater gun violence on our streets and in our homes, he said. Now, if you do nothing, which means you left your handgun ban intact, you would get greater gun violence in the streets and in the homes. We know that. Your own police chief stood up, flapping her lips, and said that there's more guns in Chicago than most other cities, even though they were banned. So what's that tell you? All of the criminals knew that all of the citizens, for the most part, were disarmed victims waiting to happen. Now, if you actually went the opposite way, Daley, and said, you know something, we're just going to go with constitutional setup. You want to buy a gun? Go buy a gun. Private party transfers, no problems. You want to go to a gun store? Yeah, go ahead, fill out the applications, open up a gun store here in the city. All you got to go through is the instant Brady background check. No big deal. It's all good. We're not going to have magazine limits. We're not going to tell you can or can't carry stuff. We're going to allow open carry. Everybody, have at it. No excess taxes or fees or applications to have to exercise your actual right. We're just going to allow it. You know what would happen? Bad guys would be getting mowed down if they actually were lame-brained and thick-headed enough to go after these otherwise intended victims, when they found out these intended victims were all armed. So that would come to a pretty immediate end and an abrupt stop. And all of the people of Chicago, especially those who were armed, would be much, much safer, because the bad guys would now know that most of their intended victims, or many of their intended victims, were now armed, had guns, and weren't just going to allow the bad guys to steal their new guns. They were going to use them to defend themselves, their family, and the rest of the people of Chicago. Stay tuned, guys. Plenty more to come after the break. You're listening to Bill Carnes right here on 2A Radio.
Listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Somebody get a silencer for this guy. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
All right, everybody. Welcome back. Welcome back. Now, know thy enemy. That is very important. From Sun Tzu's Art of War, know thy enemy. So, I'm going to read to you something by the enemy when it comes to the enemy of gun rights. This is titled, A Ludicrous Study on Gun Laws from an Anti-Gun Group. Now, anyone who traveled behind the Iron Curtain back in those days probably didn't have to look too hard to find groups of workers sitting around doing pretty much nothing except collecting a taxpayer-funded government paycheck. Well, when the government owns everything, and it is total wealth control, everybody gets the same regardless of what you do, it's a lot easier to do nothing. Now, the American way is better. anti-gun group employees can still sit around and do pretty much nothing and collect a paycheck, but the money, and lots of it, comes from donations from foundations and individuals who share their ideals. While the rest of us have to contend with anything tangible they might produce, at least we don't have to pay for it most of the time. Now, take the latest from so-called Legal Community Against Violence, or LCAV. A handful of gun-hater lawyers operating out of an office in San Francisco, California, mimicking the Brady campaign, probably not a good business plan, given the Brady campaign is not exactly a thriving enterprise these days. LCAV is now ranking the states according to how strong their gun laws are. If, by any chance, you're unfamiliar with the word ludicrous, now would be a good time to look it up in your dictionary. On the other hand, never mind, because once you go over LCAV's pseudo-scientific poppycock, you'll be able to write a good definition yourself. Here we go. Some examples serve to make the point. LCAV ranks California best in the nation through its firearms-related, though its firearms-related death rate is higher than those of 16 other states, including Vermont, which is the gun owners, one of their friendliest states, of which LCAV ranks third worst in the nation when it comes to strong gun laws. LCAV ranks Maryland seventh best, just ahead of New York and Rhode Island, the firearms-related deaths of which are only 42% and 29% that of Maryland. Joining the declaration of ideology war by someone in California against neighboring Arizona, LCAV ranks the Grand Canyon state worst in the nation, as in number one for you and I. And it goes on from there. With no correlation between LCAV's ranking and the state's widely divergent firearms-related death rates, no recognition of the fact that most firearm-related deaths are suicides, the frequency of which cannot be restrained by any gun control law, and no recognition of the fact that the world is still waiting for any evidence that any gun control law on the planet has ever prevented individuals or regimes from committing crime. You want to talk about gun control, guys? Here's the deal. Government-imposed gun control in the 20th century caused an average of 1 million homicides per year for the entire 100-year term that it took the 20th century to finish. 100 million people across the world were exterminated by their governments after gun control was levied. Do you get that? 100 million, a million people per year for a solid 100 years were killed when their government said guns are now outlawed by the populace. Continuing with this story, LCAV's point structure for this for the various gun laws doesn't even make sense. LCAV gives states 4 points, the maximum for any gun law, for requiring registration of all guns. We get that since we know that gun control supporters considered registration indispensable for purposes of enforcing a subsequent gun confiscation law. But LCAV gives almost as many points, 3, for banning 50 caliber rifles, which are probably the type of gun least frequently involved in firearms death, or darn close. As a matter of fact, I don't know that there's ever been other than one crime ever committed with a 50 caliber rifle, and the gun was never actually fired. So that's ridiculous to even have on there. Flintlocks have been used in far more crimes than 50 caliber rifles. 3 points are given for requiring a dealer to be licensed, even though federal law requires that in every state anyhow. And, well, you know, you get the idea. Ludicrous. Similar to the Violence Policy Center, LCAV is especially apathetic about assault weapons, as they would call it. 3 points for a ban. Now, that's actually sport utility rifles. Assault weapons, by pure definition, are select fire and full auto. The federal government already handles that within the NFAX. Let's see, standard self-defense magazines that hold more than 10 rounds, 3 points for ban on those, and anything at all to do with carrying a firearm for protection relative to the latter, a state gets a minus 1 point for shall issue carry permits, plus minus 1 for open carry without a permit, and minus 2 points for concealed carry without a permit. There's 3 states that do that now. This is all markedly with the number of carry states at an all-time high and the nation's violent crime rate at a 35-year low. We're not sure how often LCAV will have the opportunity to repeat its state ranking exercise, though. One bad gun law at a time, NRA, its members, and their friends elected to state offices have been eliminating gun control laws left and right for the last 2 decades in most states. And Americans have responded by exercising their right to acquire arms in record numbers. Talk about being on the opposite side of popularity. Some evidence to that effect was put forth by the BATFE recently, that's Bureaucrats Against True Freedoms, etc., in the form of its report on the U.S. firearms manufacturing in the first half of 2009. In the first half of 2009, U.S. manufacturers produced more rifles, more pistols, more revolvers, and more shotguns than in all of 2008. Coupled with increases in NICS checks of 11% between 2006 and 2007, another 14% between 2007 and 2008, and an additional 10% on top of that between 2008 and 2009. With that, the evidence is pretty clear that the gun control laws LCAV wants to have been on the wane, while the ones it most despises have become the norm. So, LCAV, you guys really need to wake up, smell a little bit of coffee, and look out for the ambulance. It might just run you over when you're chasing it in your spare time actually trying to make some money in San Francisco. Unreal. Now, we've spoken about a few different cases here on 2A Radio where people are taking photographs or video and cops don't like it, whether it's state, local, federal, they don't like it. Now, they'll use video on you at any time, but even out on the street where they're in a public area, either in a public building or on a public street, where there is no right to privacy. Cops just don't like being filmed. Now, in Maryland, they actually have a law against it, which, if that thing ever gets taken up to the Supreme Court level, I would imagine it's going to get thrown down. Because you cannot say that the government is allowed to videotape you, but you're not allowed to videotape the government. Keep in mind, if you are a cop and you are on duty, you have no rights as an employee for that. I mean, your personal rights don't exist when you're on the clock. You have employee rights, but you don't have any personal rights. You understand? You are now a representative of the government, which pays your salary, be it a city, a town, a county, a state, or the federal government. When you are on the clock, you don't have rights, you have powers and authority. Those powers and authority are granted to you by those of us with the rights. You understand? Your power and authority does not come from the state legislature, the county commission, the Congress, the president, or even the Constitution. Your power is vested by the people. Once you are off duty and you're just a normal, regular old person, you now have your personal rights. As a representative of the government, people have their First Amendment rights in which they're allowed to exercise. And since you are now a representative of the government, you have no choice but to accept it. You don't have to like it, but you must accept it. To arrest or detain somebody for exercising their rights is unconstitutional and a violation of their rights. So the police detained a man and confiscated a camera for photographing a TSA, some TSA officials. Now, this happened in Houston's International Airport, and a man who took pictures of TSA officials at Houston's International Airport ended up being detained for more than an hour and had his camera gear confiscated overnight. The incident occurred in May, but the man just posted a story Sunday on Flyer Talk, a website dedicated to traveling issues. Under the name ND Sol, S-O-L, the man describes how he dropped a relative off at the airport, then decided to walk around the airport to see the changes that have taken place. He took a couple of photos of the screening area, including a few TSA officials, that prompted two of the TSA officials to question him. One of the TSA officials asked for his identification, which he refused to provide. Because TSA officials have no authority to detain, the man continued walking around the airport with the TSA goons following close behind. ND Sol continued taking their photos as they followed him. He was eventually confronted by a pair of Houston police officers who asked for his identification and social security number. Evidently, Houston PD is now involved in collecting taxes of foreigners deriving U.S. source income, I guess. Now, HPD officer number one asked for my ID, and this is from the author. HPD one asked for my ID and inquired if I was legally required to do so. He said yes. I asked if this is a stop, and eventually he said yes, which is incorrect. He said he was being stopped and had to identify. The author continues by saying, I tried to hand him my card, but he insisted on state-issued ID. He also said I had to legally provide him with my Social Security number. Absolutely false. Towards the end of my detention, HPD 2 was on the phone with the DA's office and relayed to me that it was illegal to file a false police report. That was supposedly the basis for the requirement to produce identification. What this had to do with anything is absolutely questionable. I don't understand that non sequitur. Now, the questions then began about what I was doing and why I was at the airport. I demurred to their request for some time, but eventually inferred my detention was going to continue without answers. Who was I seeing off? What was her name, her relationship to me, her airline, her flight number, her destination, the departure time of her flight, where my car was parked? Each of my simple answers begat more questions. One question in this litany was in the middle name of the passenger I was seeing off. I said I didn't recall, but was still asked over and over the same question. The officers acted incredulous that I wouldn't remember it. I finally asked one officer if he knew the middle name of every person he dropped off at the airport, which eventually stopped that line of questioning. At one point I asked if whether answering the next question, verifying my story, would end the questioning. No answer and additional questions followed. Of course, I was asked the same question over and over again by the same officers and the other officer who was there, which I would assume was to see if I kept my story straight. The number of HPD officers at this gathering started at one, escalated quickly, and ballooned to six. In addition, seven uniformed TSOs and a number of other non-uniformed persons with lanyard IDs were standing by. At various times, HPD would confer with them, and they would confer amongst themselves or others on their communication devices. Now, keep in mind what they're doing here. TSA is not allowed to detain. They're using HPD to detain for them and ask their questions on their behalf. That is illegal. HPD 1 questioned why I took pictures of the TSOs and not HPD, so I know where the issues developed from. He didn't realize that, to this day, I know the names of two TSOs but don't know the names of the HPD officers. And I would infer that the TSOs viewed my taking pictures of them as being suspicious. Stay tuned. There's more to come after the break. Nothing against you, I'm sure that you're with you. This place is full of people, and I am too much.
the American dream, founded by men of honor, men of a creed once shared by most, and now all but forgotten. Men who risked their lives and perpetrated the most egregious acts of treason in history to create the United States of America. The Founding Fathers recognized that tyranny reigns over unarmed men, and they vowed to never allow that to happen here in the United States of America. Politicians of a lesser ilk have tried to subvert the right to self-protection, to protect your family and property. Until now, announcing America's Victory Shoots, the largest patriotic shooting event in generations, celebrating the Supreme Court's decision in McDonald versus Chicago, restoring the rights of all Americans across the land, from sea to shining sea, right in the backyard of Chicago itself. America's Victory Shoot is for Americans who share the creed of our founding fathers. Join your countrymen in a celebratory weekend of shooting events and training for the protection of you and your family at the patriotic event of a generation. There's limited space, so go to victoryshoot.org to find out more and sign up today. As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on, we'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not when you belong.
All right, guys, continuing on with this detention by TSO and HPD officers at the Houston International Airport. The guy that was detained says that they eventually frisked him and had dogs sniff through his camera gear. He was eventually released after 90 minutes, but they refused to return his camera gear, which he was not able to retrieve until the following evening. Now, the guy says he's a lawyer, but the question is, what's taking him so long to file a lawsuit, and why didn't he know his rights if he's a lawyer? Now, meanwhile, another incident took place with TSA officials at JFK in New York. Here's how the New York Times explains it. Dana Valkan, a novelist, had been snapping photos for the of the security line at the airport when he reported on Twitter that a security officer intervened to make him delete the images from his iPhone. When I was asked what law allowed them to censor pictures, none was cited. And I was asked if I supported the battle against terrorism. Now, the deleted photos apparently showed a bearded TSA officer to whom Mr. Valkan described on his Twitter account as an Islamic security guard. Some of his photos apparently survived and do show a man with a beard. Mr. Valkan said he determined the man's religion because he had Middle Eastern coloring, a beard with no mustache, and wore a skull cap. Okay. The spokesman for the TSA said he was not familiar with the episode at Kennedy and that the agency did not prohibit photos at security checkpoints except in the case of computer scanner's screen itself. However, it would not be uncommon for officers who are on the lookout for suspicious behavior to talk with a photographer to find out why he or she was taking pictures. The answer is none of your business. It is none of your business, and you are not authorized to prevent me from taking pictures by your agency because it would be a violation of my rights, and no one has authorization to violate my rights. So go away and smile because I'm going to continue to take more pictures. How about that? Guys, when the cops are violating your rights and getting in your face and trying to make you feel like you are somehow un-American for doing completely legal things, don't tolerate that. It is un-American in itself. It is a violation of your rights. It is an overstep of their power and authority, which those numbskulls that would do that enjoy too much of, and they need to be put in their place. Thanks for tuning in. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2WayRadio.com. I will not-